We used to think the brain was a machine. Break one part and forget about it. That left stroke victims, the developmentally disabled, and wobblers, people with faulty balance centers, out in the cold, along with others suffering from neurological disorders. But new research on the nature of the brain may change all that. Norman Doidge is a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and researcher at the University of Toronto. Doidge's book, The Brain That Changes Itself, is filled with examples of how the brain can actually change its structure to overcome neurological problems. Doidge told Anne Strangechamps about a woman named Cheryl, a so-called wobbler, whose sense of balance was destroyed.
Cheryl Schultz basically went in for a routine hysterectomy, and she was given an antibiotic, which has been known in many cases to poison parts of the inner ear and the balance apparatus. And it appears that that's what happened to her. One day she woke up and she couldn't stand, and she started to have this horrendous sensation that she was perpetually falling. In fact, even when she'd fallen to the floor, she still felt like she was falling into an endless bottomless pit. There was just no relief from this terrible, terrible affliction.
And she was told this was permanent, right?
Yes. Many wobblers actually commit suicide. It's such a nightmare. It's like the beginning of, I think, Vertigo, the Hitchcock movie, when someone is spinning, you know, into an abyss, except it just doesn't relent. And the person that helped her was Paul Bach-Y-Rita. Now, Paul Bach-Y-Rita was an extraordinary, extraordinary man.
What was it that Paul Bach-Y-Rita was able to do for her?
Well, Paul Bach-Y-Rita had determined that the senses, which are really sort of organized towards the back of the brain, could also be plastic. Now, when Cheryl was tested, after she had sort of lost the use of her balance system, what they found was that only 1% of that system was working. And that system consists of a part of the inner ear that tells us where we are in space, whether we're moving forward, where we're tilting to the side or not, and that kind of thing. And a clump of neurons or nerve cells in the brain that process that information. So basically 99% of that system was wiped out.
So you would think that she could never get her sense of balance back.
Because
that part of the brain was simply gone, destroyed.
Yes, the model that we had of the brain since the beginning of modern science was that it was like a complex machine with parts. And if the parts were destroyed, there's nothing you could do. So if you had a stroke, they give you a little bit of rehab for 4 to 6 weeks, thinking that, you know, we'll help you not improve your brain function so much as we wait till the swelling goes down and we get what's already there and not been lost going again. But no one ever dreamed that you could actually get new parts to take over.
So what somebody like Paul Bach-Y-Rita, who partly invented this idea of neuroplasticity, came up with was the idea that the brain is infinitely malleable and plastic and in fact can find other ways to do the same thing?
Yes. And so he found different pathways in. The only, I wouldn't say infinitely malleable, but to go from completely unmalleable to somewhat malleable or working by malleability was a very, very significant achievement. I mean, let me just give your listeners a definition of brain plasticity. It basically means that the brain can change its structure and its function and improve its function depending on what we do, depending on what we perceive, and depending on what we think or imagine. All of those three classes of activities have been shown to change brain structure and make it adapt. So what he did was he found a new way to input information about balance into Cheryl's brain. So when I was there, she put on this hat. I actually put on the hat as well. And inside the hat, there was something called an accelerometer, which is, let's say it's like a gyroscope or a level. It tells you where you are in space, if something is off kilter or not. And it fed information into a computer, which then in turn fed it back to something which is about the size of a strip of chewing gum, a flat strip that had, as I recall, 144 little metal dots on it, which were actually electrodes that gave out very, very benign shocks. So that when I put on the hat and put the thing on my tongue and I tilted forward, I felt like a rush of champagne bubbles on my tongue moving forward. And when I tilted back, the same. And when tilted to the right, they moved to the right and so on. So there we were that day in Madison, Wisconsin, in Bach-Y-Rita's, in one of his many labs. And Cheryl came in and she simply could not stand up unless she was holding on to something. And then she put on the hat. And immediately, a look of calm came over her face. And then she lifted one hand off the table, then another, and she stood free. And she stood free for about 20 minutes, because now her brain was using actually very, very old pathways that would probably hadn't been used since her brain was forming to feed information that would go from her tongue to the part of the brain that processes touch along these very, very old paths to the balance system. And she stood there for 20 minutes, looking actually blissful, you know, an incredible relief from this perpetual falling. And then, and here's where the story really gets interesting. She took off the hat, and she could still stand free. She was having some kind of residual effect. And she had done this several times before. The first time she just had the hat on for a minute, and I think she got about a 10-second or something residual effect. Then she tried it for about 5 minutes, and she got a longer residual effect. Then she starts smiling. She walks over to Paul Bach-Y-Rita. She gives him a hug. She gives me a hug. And then I look up, and Cheryl is dancing with Paul Bach-Y-Rita, and she leads. Then she starts showing off a little bit because she's got her balance back, and she says, I can walk like a woman again. She used to have to walk with her feet very wide apart. And you know, then she could sort of walk one foot in front of each other and do the test for drunkards that police do on people and that kind of thing. It was remarkable. And then she wrote back that that residual effect had lasted over 3 hours. And she kept training with the hat. And now she doesn't need it anymore, and she no longer considers herself a wobbler. And since then, over 50 people have tried this, not only with her unusual balance problem, but with other problems.
So that's extraordinary. I mean, that's just... because their entire vestibular sense is gone, and they're not anymore wearing this little thing on their tongue that's shocking them. So how is it that they can regain a sense of balance? What happens in the brain?
There was about 1% there, and it seemed that the brain was able to build up from that 1% and then reroute it, then teach other parts of the brain tissue were able to do it. You know, if you look at the cerebral cortex, which is that thin outer layer of our brains that processes sensation, the structure of it is the same in what we call the visual cortex, which processes sight, and the language cortex, which processes sound, and these other parts. And so it seems that the cortex can not only, under unusual circumstances, change its structure, but we now know from other studies that this is routinely happening all the time. In all of us, the map for your face in your brain is changing each day a little bit. It's moving around. So brain plasticity is not simply of something that happens in traumatic situations with the brain responding. It's the operating system of the brain. This is just another instance of the amazing plasticity of the brain.
I wanted to ask you if this kind of research on neuroplasticity applies only to people with really serious brain disabilities, or could it apply to those of us who have, you know, lower key disabilities, depression, anxiety?
Oh, well, in a way, what we're discovering now is that the psychotherapies that work well all change brain structure. I'm talking the talk therapies work well because the brain plasticity revolution shows that even your thoughts change brain structure. So when a person gets better in therapy, and I document this in detail in the book, we have brain scans now of people going through psychoanalytic therapy and cognitive behavior therapy and something called interpersonal therapy that show that they are restructuring their brains. And I have techniques in the book to help people with excessive worries and bad habits and OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder, to rewire their brains that they can use. But the other thing is, of course, we're all worried. As long as we thought the brain was a machine, we assumed that there's nothing you can do to stop it from deteriorating through wear and tear. And Stanley Kuransky was 90 years old when I spoke to him, and he was having senior moments and not driving as well as he had been and not as alert as he had been. His handwriting was deteriorating, and he was able, through a program by Posit Science, in 6 weeks, doing it about an hour a day, 5 days a week, to reverse all of that. And that program has been shown to turn back the memory clock in controlled studies for at least 10 years on average, and some people can turn it back 25 years, and that's only doing the program for 6 weeks. Imagine if such programs were a routine part of our lives as we got older, just as we think exercise ought to be.
The moral seems to be that the brain is capable of so much more than we think. And you have some other really fascinating stories about ways in which, I think you call it cultural malleability, ways in which people have, or groups of people have simply naturally changed and adjusted the normal, supposedly normal functioning of the brain. For instance, tell me about the group of people called sea gypsies.
The sea gypsies are off Thailand, and they make their living by doing deep diving for food, marine life food, and they go down many, many, many feet. And their children have learned, or they have taught their children, to see clearly underwater. And this isn't genetic, because researchers who have found out how they do that now teach European children how to do it, just to show that this is something you can teach. And it's so exciting, because the pupillary reflex and the reflexes that allow our lenses to focus and accommodate, you know, were thought not to have been under voluntary control. But again, this is something that's akin to a reflex, and it can be trained. And the implications are immense. It's not just that our brains produce culture, but our individual cultures alter our brains and alter our ways of processing perceptions, so that different cultures actually perceive differently. This has immense implications for politics and understanding how groups integrate together in a multicultural society, and for philosophy as well.
Well, how interesting that we're developing a truly global culture for the first time in history, thanks in part to the internet. Is that going to change some of those cultural differences?
Well, insofar as everyone does the same thing, their brains develop the same routines. So, yes, you know, that changes things, but it's not always, first of all, the internet's not static, it's dynamic. And I've got a lot in there about how the media changes our brain structures without us being aware of it. And it's altering our attention spans. If you look at the things people do on the internet, that includes things like internet porn. It changes the brain in a very fundamental way. Those who get addicted to it. Addictions, by the way, are another way of understanding them, is it's that the brain is being changed by a substance or an activity. And it's not the same as it was before the addiction. The whole area of acquired tastes is another thing that's happening. And, you know, people acquire tastes for the very fast changes on the internet. And that can lead to a loss of other abilities. So, you know, we all know that the attention span in North America seems to be decreasing. We know this from universities and what we see in schools. And people can't read, or not they can't, but they don't have a taste for reading long books. They want changes to come very quickly, the way they do on the television show 24. We are faster, but we've also lost something. So everything you do with your brain changes it, and you'd best give some thought to, do you really want to change it in that direction or not?
Norman Doidge is a psychiatrist, psychoanalyst, and researcher at the University of Toronto. He's the author of The Brain That Changes Itself. Anne Strangechamp spoke with him.